This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. The journey of Camille Saint-Saëns from child prodigy to grumpy old man is the story of one of the most remarkable personalities in music history. Saint-Saëns was not only a great composer, but a virtuoso pianist and organist, a gifted conductor and essayist on music, a poet and playwright who spoke and wrote in multiple languages, a member of the Astronomical Society of France, and a published author on subjects ranging from acoustics and Roman theater decoration to mysticism and the occult. But it was as a musician that he made his earliest and most lasting mark. After his debut recital at the age of 10, at which he played Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 15 and several solo works, he offered to play as an encore any one of Beethoven's 32 piano sonatas from memory. When he premiered his Symphony No. 1 at age 18, Hector Berlioz, who later became a close friend, made his famous remark, "He knows everything, but lacks in experience." Saint-Saëns founded a society dedicated to the promotion of French music, and in his later years, as he heard traditional tonality crumbling around him, he turned into a kind of curmudgeon, steadfastly clinging to his romantic ideals in the face of musical modernism. Still, he remained the grand old man of French music, worthy of respect and admiration, if not necessarily agreement. Ironically, the man who began that march to modernism that so upset Saint-Saëns had become a mentor to the young composer after they were first introduced, Franz Liszt. Even though Saint-Saëns was just a teenager and Liszt was already Liszt, they became close friends, and when Saint-Saëns began writing his Third Symphony in 1886, he not only dedicated it to his friend, he filled it with tributes and references. When Liszt died just after the premiere, Saint-Saëns was devastated. He changed the dedication to read, "To the memory of Franz Liszt." Saint-Saëns wrote his Third Symphony at the invitation of the London Philharmonic Society, and he knew from the planning stages that it was going to be not just monumental, but monumentally difficult. The first of his tributes to Liszt comes in the instrumentation. Large orchestra, augmented by soloists on Liszt's two chosen instruments, organ and piano. And not just one, but two pianists. The work is in two movements, but it really breaks down to the more traditional four, with themes recurring throughout the piece in different guises. Another tribute to Liszt's symphonic innovations. The symphony opens with a brief and quiet adagio introduction that sounds vaguely Wagnerian and which leads directly into an agitated allegro moderato. This theme would seem to be a nod in the direction of the unfinished Eighth Symphony by Franz Schubert, one of Liszt's favorite composers. Most of the main themes in this symphony will come from this seed. This sort of thematic transformation was a signature of French symphonic composers by this point. The first four notes of this principal theme are the exact same as the opening tones of the chant Dies Irae from the Mass for the Dead, a melody that was another of Liszt's musical obsessions. The first major variation on the seed theme is one that will fully bloom in the finale. Saint-Saëns hints at it here. This sort of cyclical composition was also a Liszt trademark. the brass take up the Dies Irae again. Eventually, the Allegro Moderato runs out of energy and segues into the Poco Adagio. The organ makes its first appearance here, subtly enriching the orchestral texture. This movement seems to have a couple of personalities. At first, veiled in ecclesiastical piety, and then later taken over by a very Wagnerian atmosphere of languorous passion. The central trio has a very pastoral feel to it. The first variation of the seed theme reappears, but quietly, pizzicato. The Wagnerian feeling returns, and the movement appears to be heading for an ominous ending. But the clouds part and rays of soft light shine through as if from heaven. The second movement begins with a strongly accented scherzo based on the seed theme. As was standard, the scherzo has a contrasting trio. The opening melody returns with a variation on the seed theme, and just when it sounds as if the trio is about to enter for a third time, Saint-Saëns introduces a chorale that turns into a fugue. Tension builds. The piano lets loose volleys of scales while the orchestra rises in a general crescendo. Suddenly, things get very quiet as the upper strings gently play the fugue subject, and the cellos and basses introduce what seems to be an unassuming phrase. It turns out to be the seed theme again. The movement dies away into uncertainty. How can all this possibly be resolved? But resolved it is, with nothing more simple than a C major chord. But what a C major chord! Not since Haydn used one 9 decades earlier to depict God's illuminating the universe in his oratorio, The Creation, had a chord launched an audience out of their seats like this one. But even more extraordinary is what all this grandeur leads up to. An elegantly shaped chorale in the strings, the end result of what has grown out of that nervous theme in the symphony's opening movement. This is the melody that entered the world of popular entertainment when Farmer Hoggett sang it to inspire his sheep-herding pig toward the climax of the film Babe. The organ takes up the chorale as only an organ can, with the brass and percussion adding fanfares between phrases. Fleeting reminiscences of previous sections pass by, even the Dies Irae returns in a final nod to Liszt. And Saint-Saëns cranks up the tempo in the final pages to conclude in a blaze of C major majesty. Despite the challenges it posed to the players, the premiere of the symphony in London went well, augmented by the attendance of the Prince and Princess of Wales. Saint-Saëns' multiple talents were on display since he appeared as the soloist in Beethoven's Fourth Piano Concerto before assuming the role of conductor in the symphony. The symphony enjoyed a colossal success, he wrote, spiced up by just enough opposition to make the success more intense. Even though Saint-Saëns lived another 35 years, he never wrote another symphony. He must have realized that this tribute to his mentor and friend, using everything in his musical bag of tricks, could not possibly be topped. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.